Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the next round on the Leave It in the Ring radio network of David Duenas. I'm your host, Steve Canine Kim. And joined, as always, from the beautiful city of San Francisco is Golden Gate Gabe Montoya. Gabe, how you doing on this, we have to be very honest, melancholy Monday?
I've been better, Steve, I got to admit. But, you know, we'll make it through it. Life rolls forward. And, you know, just do this one for Dan. It's been a tough day, I got to be honest.
If you want to call in, we'll take your calls in about 15 to 20 minutes, 347-215-7598. Once again, jump on the phone lines, 347-215-7598. If you want to tweet us a question or a comment, you can do so at SteveUCN or at Gabriel_Montoya. The big story of the day, unfortunately, the rumors that abounded on Twitter throughout the weekend were true. Dan Goosen passed away early Monday morning, according to a press release put out by the Goosen family at 3 a.m. Dan Goosen dead at the age of 64. And I got to tell you, Gabe, I'm stunned for a lot of reasons. Number one, Dan was always this vibrant, healthy-looking guy, very robust, very gregarious. But I think one thing is clear, judging by the outpouring of support and love and the tributes that are being put out on social media throughout Twitter and Facebook – you know, nobody is perfect in this game, but I think it's clear that within the boxing industry, from those in it and those who have a vested interest with it, Dan Goosen was truly a universally respected figure.
And I think, you know, universally liked, you know, gregarious, he's just warm, open guy. And you know, I'm one of those people that kind of rails on the separation between media and the people they're covering, but you know, I got to be honest with Dan. He was the first promoter that, when I moved to Los Angeles, I got to know. Kind of the only promoter I really, you know, some of the like Thompson people I kind of were friendly with. There's certain people I'd kind of know just on the beat, but I learned early on in Los Angeles that Dan answered his phone first thing in the morning. That it took everybody else a little while after him to get into the office. So if you called like 7:30 or 8, you'd probably get Dan. So we would start to talk, and I learned a lot about the game from him. I learned a bit about life, and if I can say one thing about him that really I took away was that he never let me call him. And some people would say, oh, he's trying to soften a reporter and you know, connect, create this personal relationship, but I think this is the way he lived his life. But he would never let me just call him for business. He would, it was like a dry one-liner, but it was like, you don't want to hear how I'm doing, or how are you doing? How's your family? Like, and we would engage in these things. When I lost my grandmother, like literally, like I think the next day, Dan, I believe had lost somebody around that time, or just recalled somebody that he had lost. And we talked about life and death and the future and what I was doing in L.A. And I'll never forget him for it. He was a real honest, good person. And whatever we feel about him with professional stuff, today is just about the personal of just a good person that I'm really privileged to have known.
You know, if you look at him from a professional standpoint as a promoter, this really was a mom-and-pop organization. In fact, the original name of his company, the first one that he ran, Ten Goose, had to do with the number of siblings in his family, 10. And from starting with the likes of Alonzo Strongbow, Dennis Mulholland, the Madrid brothers, just look at the list of guys he promoted. Frankie Duarte, Randy Shields, Gabe and Rafael Ruelas, Michael Nunn, Terry Norris, Bernard Hopkins, David Reed, Lance Whitaker, Chris Areola, Paul Williams, Joel Casamayor, Wayne McCullough, Glenn Johnson, James Toney, David Reed, are just some of the guys that he worked with. And the thing that I loved about Dan was that he could do a small show at the Reseda Country Club where he built the Ruelas brothers, eventually to working all the way into big venues like the Staples Center and the Madison Square Garden. And it really said a lot about him that every time he hit a dead end, there's that old saying about when one door closes, another one opens. He had an ability to open doors because he would meet people like Matt Tindley, or he'd be hired by Bob Arum, or then he would have a friendship with a guy like Ron Tudor. I said this in a column that I just wrote in tribute to his life. The guy, and Gabe, you saw this personally, a lot of his press conferences, he could work a room as well as anybody in the world.
He was ridiculous. I'll never forget those press conferences at Sicily's, Italian restaurant down there in L.A. The sausage and peppers was a pretty regular on the menu there, and he was just you got this sense of family around Dan, that his family was all involved in the business or around the business. His office was right above Sicily's. That's why we always had the press conferences there. But it had a warm feeling, and just everything about him. Like, it's one of the things that almost kept me out of the BWAA was the fact that I went on a trip, and the island of St. Lucia paid for it, but Goose and Tudor arranged it all for me to cover this Andre Ward fight in St. Lucia. And just seeing that, I mean, that there was more to just, these guys are going to be fighting, that they were sitting around telling stories. It was kind of connecting with each other and also kind of enjoying this bizarre place that we were in, this tropical island. The whole thing, to me, it just, what Dan did, I think he loved his work. And so his work wasn't work to him. His brother Joe, you know, was part of the business. His whole family, you know, involved in loving it. It was just that thing of kind of doing what you want to do with your life, surrounding you with yourself with the people that you wanted to. And, you know, talk a little bit about his innovations. Isn't Michael Nunn the first guy to have an exclusive contract in Vegas? And Dan kind of led us down that road a little bit, right?
Yes, he did. And Michael Nunn was one of his first real stars, and he also left him. And this says a lot about Goosen, Joe and Dan. Michael Nunn, after the Goosens, was never quite the same. To me, that's telling. And for full disclosure, I went on one of those junkets too. I think a year after you went to where you did, I went to the Cayman Islands to see Andre Ward against Gerson Ravel. And I remember being there in June of 2008, and I saw the way Dan was hosting this event. He was the mayor, he was the president, he was the host, he was the promoter. You could not have asked for a better guy to lead a trip like that, and it was an unbelievable time. And Dan Goosen was just a nice guy. He was the type of guy that you could have a beer with, and some of the off-the-record stuff and some of the one-liners he'd tell you were funny. You enjoyed your time with them. And listen, I had a falling out with them for about a year and a half, 2 years, where we exchanged very harsh words. It was not our best moments. But when we patched things up, it was great. And I'm forever grateful that Rodney Hunt of Goose and Tudor put us back together. And I don't know what the future of the company is. A lot of people have asked about the lawsuit with one Andre Ward. I think those questions, I think they'll be addressed soon enough. In terms of where the services and the funeral arrangements are going to be held, I'm being told an announcement will be made within the next day or two. So I'll definitely have details on that. But I think Dan Goosen, the legacy that he leaves, that he was a people person, he was incredibly effective, he was a nice guy, and he made it fun. And I've always said this, it's only boxing. Yes, this sport is very dangerous, and we have to be mindful of the health and safety of the participants, rules and regulations in our job. But at the end of the day, sports is entertainment. Entertainment, theoretically, should be fun, and we need characters like this. And Dan Goosen, you couldn't make him up if you tried. I just thought one of the trademarks of him were those bright rainbow-colored sports coats he would always wear. Nobody else could get away with it. He somehow made it work. And I'm going to miss Dan because we need other promoters. I believe that there's been basically a two-headed monopoly. And guys like Dan that could always work on the fringes were absolutely essential to the ecosystem of boxing functioning at its highest level. And Gabe, before I let you go back here, I've said this on Twitter just a couple of minutes ago. The greatest legacy, the greatest thing you could say about Dan Goosen as just a promoter is that he could take a guy from zero and zero, from scratch, like Andre Ward or the Ruelas brothers or Michael Nunn, and turn them into world champions or stars or attractions, or he could do Betty Ford and rehabilitate the likes of James Toney and Glenn Johnson. And he did everything else in between. He truly was. In fact, I didn't realize how deep his legacy was until I started researching this on column earlier this afternoon. This guy was a hell of a promoter.
I like the way you say that too. That you know these characters, you know, for better or for worse. But I have a love-hate relationship with boxing, and I want it to get better and have better rules and all that. But when I think about the alternative, when I look at, but even when Golden Boy kind of came on the scene and you started seeing everybody in these suits, and it got very corporatized. And I think of like a guy like, you know, this particular guy over Showtime that I don't particularly like. And I think that's who the business is left to guys who give a shitty fight on a regular basis and kind of have arrogance toward the boxing fans as if they've been here for decades and not us. And then I think of a guy like Dan, that he wanted to give us good fights. They weren't always, you know, his last product was Andre Ward. The fights weren't always great, you know, but Dan also trying to find a way to sell it. You know, I'm always saying that Andre Ward's going to make give Classy a comeback. And make gentlemen being a gentleman being cool again. But Dan, you know, to me, I look at that. I look at the accessibility of him and how, you know, somebody else mentioned, I think it was Doug Fisher mentioned, that he was never unkind to the web writers. He treated us the same as the, you know, the print guys. I don't see other people like that on the horizon. I think Oscar's starting to be that way, starting to warm up to the press. I mean, he understands it, but there was something very human about Dan, very real. That when I engaged with him on any level, it was he'd call you by name. He just knew how to make you feel as if you guys were old friends, and he actually cared. That was always my big takeaway with him, and I always left the Dan Goosen press conference with a big smile on my face.
Here's a tweet from Michael Taylor. He says, "You always saw Ten Goose on ESPN USA. Prime Ticket with none, Ruelas brothers, and others always fighting. Part of my childhood died." I think many of us echo those thoughts. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Tonight we celebrate the life and times of one Dan Goosen. Rest in peace. Okay, moving on to other less important affairs. Last week the big news, Saul Alvarez is now, I guess, Mr. Cotta. Because welcome back. He's going back to HBO. His fight on December 6th, most likely now, is going to be on Houston, Texas soil, maybe at the Minute Maid ballpark of the Houston Astros. My question is this. How big of a move is this in the big grand scheme of things as it relates to the boxing business?
Well, I mean, Canelo does good ratings. He's his own brand and everything. But you kind of wonder, you know, where's the substance? Like, when is he going to have the big win? We know we can get him wins and kind of action fights. No shame in losing to Floyd, but, you know, Shane Mosley was kind of a shell. Like, where is he headed at age 24? And how long can he hold that 154, which doesn't look like he's holding the weight very well, so that he can legitimately, you know, have a case that he doesn't need to fight somebody like, say, Triple G, or maybe even a Demetrius Andre. Is he going to do that, move to 60, avoid him? Or is he going to stay there and deal with him? I think it's kind of incumbent on the fights, although – you know, to play my own devil's advocate, you look at Triple G and he's fighting Rubio and it's standing room only, it's sold out. Maybe boxing fans will buy anything. So I do think it moves the balance of power. You know, for Oscar, he's moved an important piece in the chessboard, looking towards the future, the kind of the balls in Showtime's court, in a sense, to young up and see if there's any substance in all the things they've got going.
Gabe, two issues here. I think, number one, this is a seismic shift in many ways because, let's face it, out of the top four or five real mega draws, the franchises in the United States, you got Mayweather, Pacquiao, Cotto, Canelo. Three of the four now are firmly on the HBO side of the street. So that's big. And I also believe that the Golden Boy faction that is not related to Al Heyman, I think that's a harbinger of things to come. The Cold War is not over because Bernard Hopkins and Canelo Alvarez are now with HBO. The Cold War now has shifting alliances, just kind of like the Middle East. Your friend today is your enemy tomorrow. Here's what I fear for the boxing fan and the HBO subscriber. Are these HBO appearances that Canelo is going to make once a year, from what I'm told, under the historic HBO deal, as they're calling it, are they going to be mere infomercials for those $75 pay-per-views that we're going to be forced to cough up twice a year? It's great to have Canelo, Gabe, on your network because the guy draws people. He draws a very good rating. Here's the thing. When it's all said and done, though, we want fights. And I think one of the themes of 2014, we are seeing big names in a lot of mismatches from an odds maker standpoint. I know it's fashionable to rip Showtime when they're doing 50-1 fights, 33-1 fights, and 20-1 fights. But I don't know how much appeal or how competitive a Canelo-Claudio fight is if that is the actual fight. And speaking of that, before we move on to the phone calls, Gabe, James Kirkland has gone all James Kirkland. We thought he was going to fight Gabe Rosado because Gabe Rosado said so on Instagram. And listen, I think Gabe's an honest guy. I don't think fighters go out there purposely lying about certain fights that they have. He was supposed to be the co-feature on November 8th in Atlantic City in what I thought was a pretty good fight. Now it seems as though history is repeating itself. Is it now time to just write off Mandingo?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I didn't check if that's actually his Instagram, because before he used to tell me he didn't have a Twitter. And then some people claim that he did. But apparently he was saying something about, you know, he manages himself or whatever. But, you know, I mean, he should be a travel agent because he knows exactly how to get to Bolivia and get there cheap and stay there. It's sad, man. I mean, I don't think I can think of a more of a James Kirkland supporter than myself. You know, I've just been there the whole time, going, dude, this guy could be great for boxing. He'd be really exciting. But after this, I mean, you know, it was why I was reticent last week, because I wasn't hearing back anything yet. And usually, if it's on, I hear back from Ann and really fast, and it's all good. I wasn't hearing back, and sure enough, the fight didn't happen. I don't understand where he's coming from, why he thinks he's worth more than he is, who he's listening to, and why. It's just depressing. But, you know, next man up.
Next man up, indeed. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. If you want to tweet us a question or a comment, what do you remember most about Dan Goosen? Do so at Steve UCN Live or at Gabriel_Montoya. Gabe, let's hit the phone lines.
In the 860, you're live on the next round.
Hey, what's up, guys? How you doing? It's CT.
CT, you are our Ricky Henderson. You are leading off on the next round.
Yeah, I just had a question on is the fight between Amir Khan and Robert Guerrero going to be signed soon, or?
Gabe, I don't know what's going to happen there with Amir Khan. I know this much. It looks like he's going to come back in December. I'm hearing Jose Cito Lopez is still in the picture. But as it relates to all these Heyman/Showtime/Golden Boy guys, there's only one guy that really knows, and that's the puppet master, Al Heyman.
Yeah, I mean, it's you don't talk to the media. Like, it's really hard to kind of track what you're going to do next. I have no idea. You know, I think – you know, going back to like the Kirkland thing, and with this, I think we, you know, there's certain people in the sport that when they say something's on or they're told this is headed there, like yourself, I trust them. With others, even with the fighters sometimes, I think because things are so immediate on social media, we really got to mind ourselves and go back to really several sourcing each story, even if it's as simple as a fight. It's just so much like just internet crap out there, like debris from bad stories being horribly reported. But that's just, you know, I'm on a rant. Sorry.
CT, anything else?
Any news on Keith Thurman or anything?
Again, you'd have to ask Geppetto Heyman about Keith Thurman. I would hope that he's fighting sometime the rest of 2014. Because I think it would be a doggone shame for a guy who's in his mid-20s, who's as hungry and as passionate as he is, just right entering his physical prime to have three rounds against Julio Diaz in 2014. I'll be honest, Gabe, I don't know if he's being silenced or punished, but I find it mystifying the way one time is being handled this year.
He's so close to a title shot. I don't understand. He's like right there in the rankings. Everything should be there for him. And nothing is there for him. I don't understand. I mean, maybe there's some sort of injury they're not telling us about. But I don't understand what he would be punished for except for being dangerous in the division that Floyd Mayweather lives in.
Gabe, there was a report about a month ago that he did have this shoulder injury. color me skeptical. Maybe I'm just a cynic now, but as it relates to what happens on that side of the street, there are certain things that just make me raise my eyebrow.
Yeah. I mean, there's certain fights that make me raise my eyebrow. And this one, yeah, I want to see some x-rays. I don't want to see just, you know, like Bernard Hopkins' prescription for Motrin, you know? I need some hard proof.
BT, anything else before we let you go here?
No, that's all. Thank you.
All right,
thanks,
BT, thank you very much. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Down the line, we will talk about this big IBF eliminator at the middleweight division, and we'll talk about whatever the hell they're calling that on Showtime this week on Saturday night. Gabe, let's get back to the phone lines.
In the 941, you're a new caller. You're live on the next round. 941.
Hello.
Maybe they just
showed up
to
get
knocked
down. Knockdown of the night. next man up.
707. Yeah, exactly. 70, must have been James Kirkland. 707. You're live on the next round. 707.
Hello.
Wow.
That must have been Mikey Garcia then.
In the another 787, you're live on the next round. 787. Are you there? And wow, I am.
Wow.
Let's go for one more.
This is Dempsey Furpo thus far here, Gabe.
Exactly. 951. You're live on the next round. 951. Well, I can pick them tonight, and that would be a knockout. They just actually dropped off the line, so there you go.
All right. Well, Gabe, let's take a look at some of the stuff going on here in the upcoming days. In Santa Monica at the Hangar on ESPN2 for the IBF Eliminator, Curtis Stevens takes on Hassan Endam. Gabe, I think this is a 50-50 fight. In fact, I think this is one of the better middleweight matchups of 2014. I think Stevens obviously can sock with both hands. But Endam is a tall, big middleweight that could move a little bit and is very resilient, as he showed against Kid Chocolate. I got to tell you, whoever comes out of this, I think we'll have really put a feather in their cap, because this would be a very, very solid victory on the resume.
I like this fight, man. You know, Curtis Stevens is people can say whatever they want about him, but he's just a hardworking guy. That, you know, as soon as he comes off that loss with Gennady Golovkin, it was a hard-fought loss. He just gets right back in there, blows out Patrick Majewski, gets in there in a really tough fight with Turiano Johnson. Some guys might go on vacation after a fight like that. And, you know, I'm going to weigh my options next year. This guy, or, you know, I don't know, turned down, you know, $1.4 million and dropped their middleweight title belt. This guy gets back in the ring, back-to-back, Turiano Johnson gets in with Entekam, which he was not accomplished a hell of a lot in the division, but has clearly, you know, showed himself to be a solid, durable guy who might be able to get it done in this fight. I really enjoy it. I think it's the matchup is nice. More of a boxer in Entekam. Stevens, we know what he is. He's going to stay low to the ground, attack the body, and then try to shoot uppercuts and right hands. I like him by knockout. I like him in the eighth round by knockout.
Curtis Stevens better be like that automobile in New York on a one-way street. In other words, don't go into reverse gear. He nearly gave his trainer, Andre Rozier, a stroke by backing up and going into the ropes the way he did against a much more durable Turiano Johnson than he expected. And talking to him a couple of days ago for the story I'm doing on UCN tomorrow, he said that as he looks at the tape, he was a little bit surprised by Turiano Johnson. And if you just look at the range and the length and the reach of Endam, that means you better get in close if you're Curtis Stevens, because Stevens does not have what I'd call great height. He's a powerful guy, but he's got relatively short arms. So on the perimeter, he's going to have some issues. If he allows Endam to really work behind the jab and unfurl his arms, I think it's going to be a very tough fight. You know what? I'm going to go with the punching power of Stevens. I think he stops him late, because one thing for Endam's, all of his physical attributes, his height and the distance he creates, I've seen him on the floor a lot, and I think that might be the difference. And I give Curtis Stevens credit for this. There's a lot of guys that are consciously avoiding one Gennady Golovkin for one reason or the other. Gabe, just for the fact he's actually yearning for a rematch, That alone gets a thumbs up from the Kimster.
Seriously. He made him make that face getting knocked down, and that became a meme everywhere. And the guy wants more. And I think, you know, he was able to get there, and I think he believes in his power. He believes in his ability to get better and go for it again and move himself back into position. And you look at the middleweight division, and I'm not, like, you know, clamoring for this rematch just yet, but, you know, beating a guy like Toriano Johnson in a close fight, that goes a long way. If he goes through this guy more impressively than Kid Chocolate, that goes a long way. You know, he could work himself back into contention, considering how reluctant everybody else is.
Just remember this. The winner of this fight becomes the mandatory for the IBF belt that is now being tested by Sam Solomon and Jermaine Taylor. So this fight has ramifications, and one of the ways Stevens can really market himself and get himself into contention where people say, wait a minute, no one else wants to fight him. Golovkin wants all the belts, is to have that IBF strap around his waist. So there's no doubt about it. This is a big fight for Mr. Showtime Stevens. Gabe, I don't know what you have going on Saturday night with your busy jet set lifestyle and all the things that you do in that beautiful city of San Francisco and your beautiful wife, Robin, and, you know, all the millionaires that you hang around with and that glamorous theater life.
Yeah.
Are you going to watch this, what they're calling a special edition of Showtime Boxing? I mean, first of all, they're not calling it Showbox, even though they're using Showbox announcers. They're not calling it Championship Boxing because it's even worse than the stuff they've been giving us. I mean, Rancis Barthelemy, Fernando Saucedo, Martirosian Nelson, which I think is a pretty good fight, Chad Dawson against Tommy Carpency, and then Dominic Wade, Keandre Leatherwood. Huh.
I don't know if they think, you know, I don't think very special means what they think it means. Because I guess by very special they mean I wouldn't even blink at that. I got so much better things to do on Saturday night than this card. I'll catch it Monday morning or, you know, Sunday afternoon maybe. But Saturday night, that's for fun, not for I don't even know what to call this. Such a weird card. You know, the Martirosian fight, that's a fun fight. I actually like that fight. I think it's competitive. A lot of it always comes down to Vanas. What does Vanas want to do? How does he want to fight? Is he going to be kind of passive and be like a sparring partner? Or is he going to go in there and really show some passion? That's a big question in this fight.
I'll say it right now. If he doesn't show passion, he's going to have an issue coming back to his corner with Joe Goosen. And looking at some of the social media, and Vanas can really, he is a prodigious tweeter, okay? He's been talking about how hard he's being worked, how hard he's being pushed, how much sparring they're doing. And you and I know Joe. Joe is not a guy. He would much rather train Diego Corrales than Willie Pep. He wants grinders. He wants offensive fighters. He wants punchers. He wants guys that go after it. And that's always been one of the problems with Martirosian. He's always out there bouncing around on the outside with no real plan, and he never sticks his nose to the grindstone completely. There's never that full commitment to offense. In many respects, he's still never grown completely out of being that skittish amateur. And it's going to be interesting to see now, 2-3 camps in, what is the Joe Goosen effect with Martirosian? I agree with you. If there's a fight that you say, okay, I'll take some time out of my busy college football schedule to watch, it would be Martirosian Nelson. But the rest of this, you say, what does special mean? Gabe, this is an Al Haymon special because Barthelemy is now with Haymon. Martirosian's now with Haymon. Chad Dawson, who gets basically a journeyman, he's with Al Haymon. And Dominic Wade against Keandre Leatherwood might be a good opener on a quadruple header version of Showbox. And by the way, something going on with Showbox, for the rest of 2014, there is no traditional Friday night Showbox. I mean, and I really feel bad about that because for the past, 12, 13 years, that has been one of the most productive launching pads for young fighters that boxing has had. And because of the shifting climate of the business, as of right now, Showbox is shut down.
You know who's not with Al Haymon? Me. If this is what he's going to keep giving me, I'm not on board. I'm just not on board. I'm not signing on the dotted line. This is I just that's what I mean. You look at, you know, and I'm not saying Dan gave us a Super Bowl every weekend, but I get the sense that, like, the guys like Dan Goosen or even a Bob Arum or a Don King, they wanted to see a good fight at some point. They would like to build towards a Super Bowl fight that was a natural, that everybody wanted to see. And I'm not judging Don by how he is in his late 70s and 80s, because it's a different game now for him. But you know, Bob, at least, I mean, his guy's fighting a guy, Pacquiao Algieri. Algieri's no puncher, but that's a tough style. His guy's fighting something that's kind of relevant, and maybe you can get something out of that. I look at this and I don't understand. It's like, well, okay, wait, our check's cashed, I guess, is what the name of the card is called. Because other than that, I really couldn't think what to name it.
And then ahead to November 4th, and this is another card that could be described as Heyman, Flotsam, and Jetsam. Just a lot of stuff. You're like, this is ESPN2 level stuff. On premium cable, where guys are making high six figures. So I'll say this again. Heyman is doing his job, theoretically. I think it's hard to just completely blame him. I know a lot of people want to demonize what he does and his impact. Fine. Other people would take advantage of it, too, if they were allowed to. So, Gabe, the question becomes, do we blame the enabler? I think in this particular instance, yes. I mean, we said this last week, August 9th, we saw some horrible mismatches on a night of assault and battery at the Barclays Center. But at least the end game was, hey, Garcia Peterson, very good junior welterweight fight, very meaningful, and I think that'd be an excellent matchup. I'm high on that fight, higher than most, Gabe. There's a little problem. We ain't getting it. So what the hell was August 9th for, Gabe?
That's what I'm saying. It's like the checks are cashing, and you know, boxing fans, it's weird. They have a lot of power in that they could just stop subscribing, they could stop watching and kind of turn the faucet off financially, stop going. That's not really going to help the sport. That's just going to, you know, maybe change the guard up there. It's hard to say. You know, at the same time, they're kind of stuck. I mean, it's just catch 22. You know, boxing to them is a really hot girl that doesn't treat them very well, but they just can't get enough. I don't really know what the solution is. It's weird to me that boxing, I was thinking about this today, that it kind of complains that, you know, it wants to be more popular. It wants to be like the golden age when we were like, it was baseball and boxing. And now we're just like way off to the side as a quote unquote niche sport competing with the, you know, the UFC. At the same time, they don't want to consolidate themselves like the big, you know, the NFL and the NBA and MLB. They don't want a collective bargaining agreement or a universal, you know, kind of league where things could be funneled. Instead, they stay Wild West like they are. And, you know, Al Heyman's kind of the chicken coming home to roost in a lot of ways. And the enablers of the networks, I don't know what that is. To me, that's somebody's got naked pictures of somebody. I don't know what that is.
A couple of tweets here. Here's from Dave. I do remember Dan Goosen whispering in Camacho Jr.'s ear during his interview after the Leha bout, and Larry telling him to shut up. That was in 2001, and that's when Camacho basically quit in the middle of the fight. And you understood right there, Camacho Jr. just ain't got it. But, hey, Dan is a promoter. He's going to do what he does. And he understood that, hey, I'm not going to always be the angel. But that was one of those great moments, and quite frankly, it was one of those great moments that can only happen with Larry Merchant. Here's one from Tyler Cruz. Speaking of a fight that happened this weekend, what do you guys think of Artur Berturbiev's performance against Divorce Cloud? Is he that good, or was Cloud that washed up? Gabe?
I think we'll go a little longer before we find out, you know? Certainly a guy in, what, his sixth fight, just kind of blowing out a guy like Forrest Cloud, I think it's pretty impressive. I think the power is real. I think, you know, Tavares just kind of let him into the kitchen to make a sandwich, just let him do whatever he wanted to do. And when they sat on the ropes like that, and you have a guy start hitting you with multiple left hooks, I mean, either something stunned him or he thought he could just stay in the shell and it would be okay. It just wasn't okay. I don't know. It looks like the guy's power is pretty real. That left hook, I think the strength and the overall just the way he was able to, particularly in the beginning of the second round where things ended, they're in the corner and Cloud's trying to slide out to his right. And just the way that Berturbiev was able to kind of corral him back, it was kind of subtle, but to move him into the right position and then uncork that left, I think he's got a high boxing IQ. I think there's a lot of ability there. So I'm really excited to see more of him, but I don't think we're really going to know until he faces somebody that's a little bit fresher, somebody not coming off losses.
I'm with you, and this is a terrible pun, so excuse me, but the cloud in recent years had evaporated. It wasn't even overcast anymore. But at the very least, he was somewhat durable. And Tavor's cloud, just looking at his body language, when he tried to punch, it looked like he was trying to put forth an effort. I don't think he just laid down like a Persian rug. But I'm with you. Let's see a little bit more. All I know is this. Everyone that talked about Berturbiev talked about how good he is, the possibility, and what was a very good amateur background. People are high on him. And just the fact that they would take on a guy like whatever version of Tavor's cloud this was in his sixth, seventh pro fight leads me to believe that those in charge are saying, hey, we're not going to marinate this. We're going to throw this right on the grill immediately, and let's see where this goes. But as Bill Parcells once famously said, let's put away the anointing oil. Let's see. We know we could pitch early on. Let's see how he catches. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. If you want to tweet us a question or a comment, you can do so at SteveUCNLive. At Gabriel_Montoya. Gabe, who's on deck?
We got a lot of callers here. Let's see. In the 516, you're live on the next round. 516.
Hey, guys. Evan from Pennsylvania. How you doing tonight?
Evan, welcome back. How you doing?
Good, good. Great memories, and I really enjoyed the stuff on Goosen. And, the guy he really guided, I know he was a Heyman back guy, but Paul Williams, nobody wanted to fight, and Goosen really, really guided him to some, relatively big fights, and he had the Alvarez fight, until the unfortunate accident. So there was another guy that Goosen really fought for and built a good career out of. In addition to obviously the guys like James Toney and Andre Ward, but on the October 4th card, it's the Martirosyan-Nelson fight, I think, has the potential to be a very good fight. But when the best fight on a quadruple header features Venis Martirosyan, it's not much of a quadruple header at all. It's my philosophy on that.
Evan, if this was a defensive line, its nickname would not be the Fearsome Foursome. Now, Evan, you are a hardcore boxing fan, just given the fact you listen to this show live, okay? So the question is very simple. Saturday night, you have stuff to do. Are you going to watch this fight live on Showtime?
If I'm home, yes. It's not the sort of card that's going to keep me home on a Saturday night. Let's put it that way. It's not Triple G worthy. But I wanted to touch on something that Gabe said. As a hardcore boxing fan, a lot of times we'll say, I wish the sport was more popular. I wish more people appreciated or whatnot. But I think in a way, and I know this goes for me, I think boxing fans enjoy the sport being a niche sport in that whenever there's a big fight or, Mayweather, Canelo, Mayweather, De La Hoya, Tyson Lewis, things of that nature, it brings out all of the casual fans. And there's nothing as a boxing fan I hate more than the casual fans talking about boxing and them thinking they know what they're talking about. And then me trying to explain things to them, and it's just very frustrating as a boxing fan. Because I think in a weird way, We sort of like it this way, We sort of like it. It's our own little club, and it's this weird little sport with these Wild West and these rules that nobody understands. I sort of think that's the charm of it for hardcore boxing fans like myself.
Yeah, I could agree with that. It is something old world. It's the last barbershop in a lot of ways, where you can just be. You could say, we need to get this kid in with some more Mexicans. And you immediately know, well, you need to get him in there with some durable guys that are going to go some rounds or some guys that have been pounded into the ground that are going to be a quality knockout because he's a Mexican. Like you can use shorthand like that. Or, he hasn't faced a lot of black guys, meaning he hasn't faced a lot of quick athletic people. Like I'm not arguing for racism. It's just boxing. I agree with you. There's a lot of that is cool, but at the same time, it's hard to take it seriously when you see scores like the Abraham fight this weekend. Like, I felt that he won, but, what are we doing with those scores? And, we're just going to ignore that that dude is totally corrupt? That stuff is hard to explain to John Q. Casual. That and try to explain multiple sanctioning bodies and what that means to them. I know it's good for them, but like every time I bring up all the WB or whatever's, my friends just tune out like right there. Like they have no idea what I'm talking about.
Right, but you know what? That goes to my point, guys. The casual fans don't care about having one belt. They just want to see certain fights and good action. That's why this whole thing, we're going to save boxing by doing our own rankings that everyone ignores, but gosh, golly gee, we're going to have one champion we're going to recognize. Nobody cares. Make fights. Make them exciting. Make this entertainment. Promote them correctly. That's what's going to help boxing, not this other stuff.
I'm not even sure I trust all the majority of those guys' opinions on movies, much less who the champion is. I mean, it's just not the way the way the freaking business works anyways. Like, to make up fake rankings like that, it's just, it doesn't, you're like, okay, I'm just going to suspend reality and go over here. That's not how the rankings work. I mean, I talked to a guy just the other day that basically said, you know, you would kind of make verbal agreements to get rankings. Like, I got this good kid. Well, cool, if he fights this guy, we'll move him to 20. If he fights this guy, we'll move him to 10. Is that fine with you? Yeah, cool. Money changes hands, but it's all personal relationship. You know, that's I'm sure money changes hands somewhere, but maybe not between them. But, that's not the way the business works, and it's ignoring the whole reality of the thing. Evan, I want to touch on one thing you did say, you know, about Dan. And this is how, when you make a personal connection with somebody, you can really learn a lot. And I got to see Dan on the ups and on the downs, like firsthand, in terms of Paul Williams. I was, you know, he really believed in him in the Margarito fight, and I backed Paul. I was like, I think he's going to win. I just like his chances. And even though he'd never boxed kind of and punched before, he was more of a volume guy. I felt like he could do it enough in this fight. I felt like that he won, and I watched them all be really happy. And then I watched him lose to Quintana. And both the times, Dan, I could see Dan right across the ring and just perfectly. And what was amazing about him is you couldn't tell if this guy was winning or losing in a fight. He had this great poker face, and he just took the loss. You could see he took it heavy. And when Paul, I was there when he got knocked out by Sergio Martinez. But he also understood the game, but it always was just so heavy on him. I found him more than a lot of people in the game interesting to watch during the highs and the lows. It's just, he must have been a hell of a poker player.
Hey guys, speaking of sanctioning bodies and money changing hands, in the mid to late 90s, we had the IBF scandal where a lot of the big brand name promoters flat out admitted, and they were indicted and had to cut deals because they were making deals with Bob Lee for ratings. The one guy whose name was conspicuous by his absence was Dan Goosen, because he didn't play that game. He was very proud of that. And that said a lot about Dan Goosen. And Gabe, you talk about the personal touch of Goosen. Just a short story with me when I was leaving Max Boxing. As word filtered throughout the audience, Dan Goosen unsolicited called me just to see what was going on, what I was going to do with the rest of my life and all that other stuff. And he said something interesting to me. He said, Steve, you know, every time that I've left a job or a place that I've been at employed to do something else, it was always the right move. He said, keep that in mind. Do not be afraid of change and just do what you love. And he just said that as a friend. He had no idea what I was really doing, what UCN was going to be. And that really, that's something that I'll always remember about Dan Goosen.
That's pretty sweet. Yeah, he's that guy. You know, he just, it was always weird. Like, he would slow me down. I'd be like, Dan, you know, I'm calling about, you know, such and such. He'd be like, so how you doing, Gabe? You know, just really, just undercut you. And you're like, well, I'm an ass. I'm sorry, Dan. How you been doing? You know, and we'd slow down. And then it'd be like, okay, so Paul's going to, you know, do this. And we'd go into business. It's just, hell of a guy. Just warm human being.
Evan, anything else we could do for you?
One quick thing. I know I've taken up a lot of time. Just about Anthony Joshua's last fight this weekend. Is he David Price Redux, in your opinion?
We're going to find out soon enough. Listen, they're making it up with volume. He still had a relatively short amateur run, from what I believe. Listen, I don't think there's any pressure on him to fight anybody the first 4 or 5 years. I really don't. I'm not saying that they're going to necessarily do the Deontay Wilder, but right now they're working off of volume and just getting him acclimated to being a pro, punching with smaller gloves, no headgear. Until we actually see a lot of these amateurs get clipped right on the button, we don't know if they could take a punch. It really is the unknown.
He started at age 18, you know, so he does have a lot of catching up to do. And I like him, actually. I really like him right out the gate. It's hard to say. You know, I like his fluidity. I like how coordinated he is with his hands. I'm not crazy about how a little bit stiff he is in, like, the shoulders and neck. Like, he's a little
bit upright.
Frank
Bruno feel, doesn't it? He kind of has that Frank Bruno look where you're like, this guy's built like Tarzan. What happens when he gets clipped? That's going to really determine what his physical ceiling is as a prize fighter.
That's the whole shebang right there. I'm excited to see him get punched. So guys, I like him. I like his style. He seems like a good dude, good interview, good for the sport. And it's just he's going to mix it up. Like, I was never really a big Lennox Lewis fan because she's a big guy, but it was like, dude, mix it up. Like, let's see you take fools out. I don't want to watch a sniper. You know, I want to watch a guy with a Tommy gun. And Joshua seems like a guy that's learning how to set it up, but he wants to mix it up. He wants to fight and be aggressive. That's good for the game.
Evan, we got to get running, okay?
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate it.
If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next?
Let's see. In the 347, you're live on the next round. 347. 347?
Oh. Ooh, another knockdown. Let's move. Oh, who is this?
Did he go?
Hello?
Oh, I guess that's it. Oh, man. You still there, 347? Did you mute yourself?
Yeah, it's time to kill him. Let's move on.
All right. The 760. You're live on the next round. 760. Wow. All right. Everybody is just too moved.
They're
to
just
talk.
Enthralled. They're just enthralled and want to listen to what's going on here. That's what's going on.
In the 914, you're live on the next round.
What's going on, fellas? Am I on?
Yes, you are. Welcome to the next round.
Good stuff. Big fan of both of you. Steve, love that column today on Goosen. Gabe, love your work on PEDs. Question for you guys.
Thanks, man.
I'm a conspiracy theorist and all that shit. I question everything. I'm curious. I'm watching the Tavoris Cloud fight, and I see a guy that I used to love get wiped out by some clown. I wonder. I think a lot of fights are fixed, and I'm kind of curious on if you guys think how often it happens at that level. You know, I look at fights like Matisse, and I see a destroyer, and then his biggest fight, he just doesn't show up against Garcia, and I just wonder, is that a man that's just off the juice? Is it fixed? I want to know, do you guys think that fixed fights happen? And I know you guys say that it's fixed with the judging and the ref and all that, but do you literally think guys take dives at this level?
You know, am I saying that no Greg Louganising goes on? I think that'd be naive, but I'll be honest with you. A lot of these matchmakers are very good, and the way these fights are matched in terms of ability, you don't need to fix them because you're already predetermining the result based on the level of skill and acumen that these guys have. There are very few quote-unquote real fights. I mean, when you go to a fight card, all you have to do is figure out who's in the red corner, and they're all usually with the house promoter, and 98% of the time, that side of the ledger is going to have all the winning boxers. So if you have a decent matchmaker that knows good booking agents and understands which guys are perennial opponents that are just there to kind of dance around and not really try to win, not so sure you really need to fix fights.
I agree. I mean, I think you can shade it so many ways in your favor. That you just, you know, these guys are like a lot like Ace Rothstein, you know, finding out all the information about who's out of the gym, who's in the gym, who's ready to go, you know, who's this or that, and they hedge it all for themselves. They also know all the, you know, different commissioners and all that, all the officials. But do I think fights get flat out fixed? Yeah, I do. There's been a few. I don't like to say the names because I don't like to just throw, you know, shade
or
like
get
that,
sued.
But,
and we don't want to get sued, Gabe. Let's be honest. We don't want to get sued.
I don't want to get sued. But we've all watched the fight, and we've talked about the fights on this show. And I pretty recently, last couple months, and there was one in particular that I just was like, that looks like a non-effort. It looked like a total non-effort. And the dude would do well, and then he would stop. It was like a Billy Fox kind of thing. And I just kind of was like, And his corner was even like pleading with him, like, dude, what is going on with you? And I kind of just had a feeling what was going on with him, you know. But so I don't know. I don't know how often. I couldn't give you a percentage.
One more thing, guys. I'm a huge boxing fan, as as hardcore as you can get. And I'll be honest, man, all this Heyman shit is really turning me off the sport big time. I never thought I'd say this, ever. Like, I'm a freak. I'll watch anything. But it's really getting to me. I watched the UFC this past weekend at a friend's house. And on the preliminaries, off the pay-per-view, they showed a guy, Dominic Cruz, UFC world champion, came back against the ranked eighth fighter, and it was a preliminary fight. And I was just thinking,
yeah.
imagine if a boxing champion who was undefeated came back after 3 years and fought a ranked eighth fighter. I mean, that'd be a main event, maybe pay-per-view. And this was a preliminary, you know, before an extra seven fights after him. And I'm wondering, what do you guys think is the bottom line? Where is this going to go in boxing? Because they're losing fans. I mean, it's obvious.
You know,
I'm being turned off the sport. When is this going to end, and what's the final result in a few years? Where does this go?
Well, it's interesting you bring up the UFC, because everyone seems to believe, that's in the know, that Al Heyman's going to start his own version of a boxing league, much like the UFC, where he acts as the Fertittas and Dana White. He's the end-all and be-all. I'm even hearing rumors that he's going to basically start his own belt, which is why he's allowing or telling guys like Peter Quillen to dump the belt. And the other thing that I'm being told is the reason why he's shoving all this nonsense on the Showtime for the rest of 2014 is that he's going to put all his good stuff on NBC Sports, where he has a $50 million backing from this hedge fund. So two separate leagues of boxing of Heyman and everyone not Heyman, maybe that's where it's going.
Wow. Yeah, that's been, you know, the end game. And then also, I think, further breaking down the current paradigm, I'm hearing that, you know, the NBC deal is kind of a launching pad, but that it's going to be more of an online kind of a thing, that eventually they're going to go like Heyman Fight Pass, and you're going to be paying for it that way, and maybe even undercutting the streams by making it so that it's something that you watch, you know, on your computer as well as, you know, watching it on cable. He could be really, you know, changing the industry. Is it for the better? I don't know. I mean, is it too soon to know? Is it good to have all of this in one hand? Like, you look at the UFC, and like, yeah, you know, seeing the Dominator in that situation, awesome fight, by the way. It was pretty awesome. But you kind of go, well, maybe how much was that guy making for that fight versus how much was he risking? Is that really good for him, or is that good for the guy that owns the company? That's kind of always been the big argument, too. Like, Floyd likes being independent, so he can make all that money as a free agent. You know, if you made a collective bargaining agreement, Floyd would have to share some of that coin. I don't know. It's a complicated question. I'm not sure where we're going, but it sounds like Al knows where he's going.
Yeah. All right, listen, thanks for the call.
Thank you very much.
If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. At the top of the hour, we'll talk about some of the past weekend's fights that took place internationally. Gabe, let's get back to the phone lines. Gabe?
The 787, you're live on the next round. Sorry about that. 787? 787s are killing me tonight. Let's see. All the way down, 714. Let's try you. You're live on the next round.
What's up, guys?
Good.
What's up, man? Hey.
Not much. You guys, you know what? I called probably about 20 minutes ago, so I missed the first part, half of the show. But what'd you guys think about the Alvarez-Chavez fight over the weekend?
I believe Omar Chavez should find a new line of work. I think that was one of the most desultory, disinterested performances, and I don't know what he was doing for the first 8-9 rounds, and they showed a shot, because this fight was not on BN Sports as originally planned. It was on Unimas. There was a look on Julio Cesar Chavez Sr.'s face where I don't understand Spanish, but his facial expression said, can I put him and Junior up for adoption?
And between that picture recently of Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. like eating a burger, you know, maybe he's in really good shape between burgers. And this fight, dude, I mean, it's just, you kind of get the feeling that maybe these guys aren't that into boxing, you know? Kind of the reluctance of Julio to make a meaningful fight with a dangerous opponent. And this thing, I don't understand what Omar is. He seemed like he was tired pretty fast. Just one punch and done, kind of surviving through a sparring session that somebody else was making him do. I don't know, man. Omar, the businessman Chavez, maybe he needs to retire and go into business doing something else.
Right. Now, what's your guys' take on, or have you guys heard anything from about Robert Guerrero, the Ghost?
No, I mean, he recently tweeted out a picture of him at the Heyman boxing offices. Outside of that, your guess would be as good as mine. I get the sense that, like many other Heyman clients, he's just waiting for his assignment from Master Heyman, and he'll probably be paired up with another Heyman client in the near future. All right, anyway, listen, thanks for the call. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. And, folks, if you want updates on Al Heyman fighters, this is probably the worst place to call. We have no information, just like anyone else. And I think you might be better off asking them on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. And I'll be honest with you. I don't think most of those guys even know what they're doing next. Gabe, let's get back to the phone lines.
No. See, when, yeah, Sean Porter was champion, it would take him forever to find out what was going on. He's just going to wait for the thing from Val. But now that Al's got so many pieces, he's got to move them all around, and there's a lot to be done. And it's kind of interesting. That, to me, is foreshadowing. In the 510, you're live on the next round. 510.
Oh, well, they are dropping like flies today.
It is. Yeah, this is, wow. This is like an Andre Ward clinch fest. 661, you're live on next round.
Hello?
Yes, who is this?
Hi, this is Roger from Long Beach. How are you guys?
Good, Roger.
What's up, man?
What can we do for you?
Good, good. Well, when you call from Skype, you don't know what the area code is, so that might be the issue with people not picking
up. Yeah, Gabe, jeez, man, cut this guy a break.
Well, look,
God, Gabe,
look.
So long, right, what can we do for you?
All right, maybe it's too soon, but what do you think? I missed the first part of the show. What's going to happen here with Andre Ward with the passing of Dan Goosen, who, oddly enough, another interesting thing about Dan Goosen, remember when boxing promoters were asked to testify before Congress. I read he was one of the only major ones that showed up. Is that true?
Yeah, that is absolutely true, by the way. As it relates to the Andre Ward situation, unless Dan Goosen was named like a key man, I believe the lawsuit is ongoing or whatever grievances, because I think most of the time, like, listen, if you sign with the New York Yankees just because George Steinbrenner died does not make the contract null and void.
Yeah, I mean, I would think so, right? But I was just curious, you know, it's just kind of ironic to the only guy that's life, right? The guy that actually showed up of the major promoters dies earlier than some of the more controversial characters in our sport, right? I mean, that's, you know, that's life, I guess. But yeah, that's
hey,
too bad.
Kind of
also,
it's like
really bad
forever.
Karma. Oh, Don King's going to outlive us, and I'm in my 30s. I don't know how he'll be around, but,
you know,
yeah.
The old joke about Don King was, if the atomic bomb was launched, there'd be two things remaining, cockroaches and Don King. That was a joke I heard from the very first days I was in this business.
Oh, yeah. Last question. Actually, I sent a message to Gabe and Dave Duenas. I was really upset about the James Kirkland thing. I don't know. I'm just hoping, Gabe, because I know you had a close relationship with him. Do you have any insight into what this guy's thinking? I it's just so disheartening because he was so exciting his last fight out, and I mean, you just see him with Ann Wolf, and you think to yourself, just stick with Ann Wolf, dude. You know what I mean? You're not Pernell Whitaker. You're not anything slick. You can make money doing what you're doing, and he does this. Do you have any insight as to what's going on with him at all?
No, you know, James and I've always been probably – I've talked with James extensively, and we were good there for a while. But the last time I talked to him was right before he signed with 50 Cent. And there was interest from Mike Tyson. And I thought that was a better choice. And basically, I think, you know, I put Mike and James in contact with each other. Somebody that knew Mike said Mike wanted his number. I didn't know why Mike wanted his number. It was just before he announced his promotional company. And And so they talked, and then he went with like Fiddy pretty soon after that. And that's really the last I talked to him. I know Mike Rick even went down to visit him, and he was all excited. And that was literally the last we spoke. I've reached out several times, and it's just like, but Ann will always talk to me. And so for me, at this point, I really don't know what happened this time. Nobody seems to know. And more than that, nobody really even seems to want to deal with it. They're just like, all right, fine, dude. You're 30.
Gabe.
You don't want to fight. You know, she's got black magic, that other kid. She's happy. Yeah.
Gabe, let me just ask you a very blunt question, though, because we always make it an issue of economics with Mandingo Kirkland. How about this possibility? Maybe he just doesn't want to fight and then also go through a training camp as rigorous as the one Ann Wolf will put him through. Is that a possibility?
I think that's very viable. I really do.
Can
like,
I interject something?
Yeah, please.
I'm sorry. Okay, this is probably not it, but he's so exciting, and I just want to give him the benefit of the doubt. Is there any possible way, shape, or form? I don't know his contract, and maybe he has a point. I doubt it, but is there anything?
You know, he may have a point. Listen, he may have a point, but in this marketplace, if that's your highest offer, it is what it
is.
Yeah. It's not like someone else is offering him $2.2 million. I mean,
well,
this is a guy who turned down basically a $750,000 payday to face Canelo about 2-3 years ago.
That's right, yeah.
So
yeah, you're
there's,
right.
There's a pattern here where it's like, it just makes you wonder. And go ahead, Gabe.
Well, HBO said, okay, because he said, I don't have enough time to train. Okay, here's more time to train. It's not enough money. Like, what is it, dude? Like, what is... You know?
Yeah,
like,
I'm going to use a Steve Kimism with that guy. That carton of milk is about to expire, man. I mean, he's 31 and he keeps, you know what I mean? Like, he keeps going back and forth in his style.
Steve hit it on the head, though. Every time, particularly after he came back and he was with a different trainer, Kenny Adams, and I would ask him about Ann, and he would always say, she's the only one that can get me in shape. And when he was on Leave It in the Ring, he'd say the same thing. She's the only one that could get me in shape. Well, why aren't you going to be with her? Well, there's some things. And he just – it was like – I always thought there was a reluctance to go to hell, basically, which is what her training camps are. And maybe that's what this is. And maybe
guys,
now at 30, like, dude, it costs more to go there, you know?
Just remember this. Fighters who fight. Like Gennady Golovkin. I'm sure he misses his family living in Germany. He has a lot of money. This guy wants to fight. So guess what he's doing? He's doing it. And that's the way – hey, listen, if you want to be stuck in Bolivian, good luck to you. Listen, we got to get running, okay?
Okay, cool. Thanks, man.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, man.
Hey, let's take a look at the fight review real quick. We referenced this earlier for the WBO super middleweight title in Germany. Arthur Abraham takes on Paul Smith. Your scorecards, 117-110, 117-111. 119-109. Gabe, I think we're both in agreement. I think Abraham won the fight. I thought he landed the cleaner, harder punches. I do think Abraham fights are very difficult to score because of his style and the fact there's a lot of dead spots where he goes into that high turtle guard shell. But should we be outraged when they get it right if the margins are too wide? Is that the context we should be looking at this?
I think so. I mean, you just kind of go, what were you watching? I mean, I just think there should be tears. And I want to know how that guy, you know, how that scorer got, or that judge, you know, got ringside based on what, you know, what merit was it? How many fights have you just gotten so right that you need to be here now? And then what caused you to get it so wrong? You know, like, I think that's fair. I think there should be just a setup of a board of review for these guys, and there should be consequences, even in a winning effort, because it's, you know, it's a collective of three people. But I mean, you can still, I guess, you can get it right and still get it very wrong.
I think the case of Robert Hoyle in his 119-109 scorecard for Mickey Bayo against Miguel Vasquez is a great example. Listen, if you think that Mickey Bayo won close, I wouldn't argue with you. 119-109 makes me go, that looks like a predetermined score. Gabe, here's a fight I was at in Texas. I actually part of the broadcast crew for Mike Tyson Productions, along with Sean O'Grady, who, by the way, is every bit as funny as I remember him on Tuesday Night Fights. The WBA bantamweight title switched hands. Juan Carlos Payano with a technical decision in 6 rounds over Anselmo Moreno. Gabe, I'll be honest with you. The scorecard, 59-55 and twice 58-56 for Payano, who is the new belt holder. I'll be honest, I disagreed with it. And here's the funny part. When they went to the scorecards, Mike Tyson was actually sitting with us calling the fights and obviously has a vested interest with Payano. I'm not going to lie to you. When they announced and knew, Mike Tyson's facial reaction said it all. He was surprised that Payano got the decision.
Yeah, again, it's just one of those things where you're like, where are the checks and balances? And everybody kind of looks around and says the same thing with the crowd. You know, this is at its base is kind of entertainment. And I always kind of value the opinion in some respects, maybe not about business stuff, but when the audience knows what they saw, it's very rare, particularly the live audience, to be there and like, to have, you know, a collective different experience than reality, you know? Even though everybody's probably drinking and having a good time, I just didn't see how it went any other way, that, you know, how it went the way it went. But, you know, again, it's boxing.
By the way, Gabe, if you have a chance, whether it's ever going to be put up on YouTube, my understanding is this show will eventually be in the United States, and it will be syndicated on various cable platforms. The third round between Charles Hatley and Richard Gutierrez, where Hatley gets decked and is nearly out on his feet, almost knocked out if he gets hit with one more clean shot. By the end of the round, he turns it around and has Gutierrez in trouble. Just might be the round of 2014. Gabe, other news and notes here. I think anyone that says now, if they use an excuse, well, nobody knows Gennady Golovkin. He doesn't sell tickets. He doesn't mean anything. He's not a draw. Gabe, not only did they sell out, then they added standing room only tickets to the StubHub Center, which has never been done. Now Gabe, it was announced on Friday. Now, I didn't even know this was possible. They are now adding bleacher seats. Gabe, so that excuse now can be thrown right in the garbage, right?
Yeah, at this point. I mean, because it's, you know, this fight isn't, I don't want to be all, you know, negative Nancy or whatever, but it's not even like, you know, Rubio has a following. Somebody asked that. I saw somebody asked you that today on Twitter.
Oh, he's Mexican, isn't he? Isn't that the whole thing? He's Mexican.
Yeah, it's like, oh, we'll buy anything, you know? Oh, burritos, give me those. Because, you know, I'm Mexican, and it's kind of Mexican.
For the record, folks, Gabe Montoya is Mexican, so save the outrage.
I'm actually always kind of offended by that, you know? But I think, you know, it shows that, well, Mexican fight fans, they love a fighter. They love a dude that just is a badass. He's kind of a Chavez type. No frills. Goes in there, hard worker, always ready to go. You never see fat Triple G or kind of out of shape Triple G. He's always ready to work, and the Mexican fans respect that style. It's no frills, and it's always guaranteed action. And I think the ticket sales really reflect that. Where boxing is missing a flagship guy. Floyd can call himself the face of boxing all he wants. He's been around the longest. He's the most well-established star there is. But when it comes to excitement, It's Triple G right now. It should be James freaking Kirkland, but he's kooky. But it's Triple G. And the sales speak for themselves.
You know, people could talk about how having a Mexican has made this an easy promotion. Here's the bottom line. I know a lot of people, and I know personally, I've met them through Twitter. I've seen them at fights across the country. They become friends of mine or acquaintances online. People are coming in from Kansas, Arizona, New Jersey, San Diego. So they're either driving a good ways or flying in from other time zones, and it's not for Rubio. So that is the biggest development of all as it relates to Gennady Golovkin and his Q rating with boxing. Here's another story. Gabe, you mentioned Mayweather. The Nevada State Athletic Commission, I think it's clear that the tail wags the dog here. I mean, we all know the situation with the marijuana and the human cockfights he has inside of his doghouse or dog pound or whatever he calls it. Right now, if you're Showtime, you got to be wondering, is this relationship really worth it? Because he threw that network right under the bus. And I know a lot of the people that work on that production of All Access and other stuff they do. I don't think there's any doubt. And, in fact, there's proof where the guys have said there was no editing. We went through a 31-minute round. It was basically, quote-unquote, in the words of Floyd Mayweather, Mr. Safety himself, fight to the death. I'm just wondering, why hasn't Showtime said anything to rebuke this? This is only their reputation on the line, isn't it, Gabe?
Well, I mean, they're in a catch-22, you know, on one level. I mean, they're completely, you know, people could say, well, oh, you know, I've seen a lot of Mayweather apologists say this. Well, you know, surprise, are we outraged that a reality show wasn't reality? Well, I don't know. You're using this show to sell a fight that's supposed to be real. But now you're telling me that these actors are so good that you can stage a fight that looks that real, and then a guy can be all upset, Floyd can mock him, and play this whole scene. I'm a pretty good actor, you know, I'll say, and people can say whatever they want about my career, this and that. I've been acting since I was 5 years old professionally. I've done it 17 years. I know BS acting when I see it. Those guys deserve Emmys because they're amazing.
Gabe, here's the issue,
it.
Though.
I don't buy any of
No, but Gabe, here's the issue about those who say, oh, reality show is scripted and it's fake. You know what? I don't disagree. We're not saying this is snooky in the situation, in the real world. I think those scenes were absolutely real. See, that's the irony.
That's
here.
What I'm
in this instance, that was real. And the commission actually says, good job, Floyd. They're actually praising him. And by the way, Gabe, I don't find the marijuana thing to be that big of a deal. I'm not saying it's healthy for an athlete to be around marijuana, but let's live in the real world. And I don't want to come off as politically incorrect, but I think within a decade, most jurisdictions will make marijuana very legal. And there's a drug test there. If you test positive, then you deal with the ramifications. But there's a lot of people that are around marijuana that don't use it. I think being within the vicinity of marijuana is not illegal, last I checked. I don't think that's that big of a deal. But I do find it extremely hypocritical that when a guy says, I'm all about the health and safety of fighters, and we got to look out for them, and I don't want to be brain damaged. Well, now you're having sparring sessions where there's no real weight class, and you're going 30 minutes at a time. There is a serious disconnect there.
Well, and also, I mean, it's a waste of taxpayers' money. What was the hearing for? If there was not going to be any evidence presented, there's really no legal ramifications. Nobody was sworn in. It wasn't an official hearing, you know, in that regard. It wasn't like he was lying to the grand jury. It was a dog and pony show. It was a waste of money and time. I don't really understand the goal. And I agree with you on the marijuana. To me, the guy's probably around alcohol. That's 1,000 times worse for you, in my opinion. The weed is going to be legal in about 5 years everywhere, so who cares? But as far as lying to the commission about that fight, and even probably lying about the weed, if that was, you know, is that fake or not?
Fake weed.
I just don't understand. You could just do that, you know?
Fake weed. That may be the worst alibi I've ever heard. Fake weed. Like, there's such thing as near beer. So would this be called feed, fake weed? I was like, Floyd, that you know what? You got more balls than I thought for even bringing that up. Here's a tweet from Amilcar Barca. Guys, I'm missing the show. ESPN airing Jermaine Taylor fight is a disgrace. Amilcar, we're going to rip that thing apart next week when it's time. And speaking of Showtime, Gabe.
Time.
Yes, yes. Yeah. We got to have a certain type of chronological order here to our outrage. Here's one from Mr. Miles. Speaking of Showtime, and Gabe, I'll tell you right now, you giving up on Ray Donovan as early as you did is criminal. I mean, you know what's funny? You're just punishing yourself, but he says, tell me, does Ray do Ezra in? Why no Avi and Ray scenes? Did Kate really send her story in? Talk to me, Steve. Mr. Miles, all I can say is this. Watch season 3 next year. I think all those questions will be answered. And here's one from Manny. Can they just name the Saturday Night Show sports card Heyman Special Time? Yeah, basically you can. Gabe, let's get back to the phone lines.
It is. It's like he's just working, you know, running out the clock. Like, look, I've got something great. Just wait. 585, you're live on the next round.
Oh, wow. I really didn't expect to get called, but I've been holding since 7:02 or something.
Oh,
well, you know
I'm
what?
Sorry.
Listen, I don't want to assign blame to anyone, but just completely blame Gabe for that one.
Fine.
That is still my bad.
I blame the Mexican guys. Fine. I'll just do that.
Orale. Okay, what's going on?
R.I.P. Dan Goosen, what you were saying about his coat is really funny because he somehow pulled it off, and was taken seriously, and Craig Sager does the same thing, and he's a clown.
I said in today's column that Dan Goosen's closet must look like a Lifesavers wrapper, because he literally had every color, but there was a certain charm to Dan. I mean, Dan had no shame in it. But I just want to say one thing. We joke around with Dan because we're paying tribute to him, because he was a fun guy. He really was. I'm not saying that we weren't ever angry at each other, but I will say this. I could say this wholeheartedly on behalf of a lot of media members. Dan Goosen was a lot of fun, and we are going to miss him on many, many levels.
Fred Sternberg was remembering him on Facebook and talking about, you know, how Dan hired him to be VP of, you know, America Presents early on and taught him all about promoting. And all I could think of was, God, I wish I'd been a fly on the wall for that, because Fred Sternberg and Dan Goosen are two of the funniest people I'd ever met in boxing. Just love to laugh. Like, they probably love to laugh more than anything else.
Is there anything else we can do for you?
Sure. After all the court matches is figured out, where do you see Andre Ward ending up after all this?
You know, we're going to have to figure out exactly what the ruling is going to be. I don't know what happens to the defamation lawsuit. I think, you know, those are matters that I'm sure that were loosened up or tied up during his last days, the last couple of weeks. I honestly don't know. We're going to have to see how this process plays out before we make any forecasts about Andre Ward.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right, no problem. Gabe, we have about 15 minutes here. Let's shoot through the phone lines.
All right. The 931, you're live on the next round.
Hey, keep calm and sing Rocky Top.
Oh, my God. I got to tell you, Butch Jones has the volunteers. I tell you what, he's got him in the right direction there.
Yes, yes. Good things. Good things are happening. Hey, guys, I got a question. Me and my bro are rolling to Atlantic City for the B-Hop fight. And we got ringside tickets. We're very excited, believe it or not. And any thoughts of, or have you heard any rumors about the replacement of the Rosado and the fugitive from Texas?
Yes. Actually, it's been announced. It looks like it's going to be a welterweight bout between Luis Abreu, the hard-hitting Argentine, against Saddam Ali. And, guys, I think this is a terrible fight for Saddam Ali because his chin isn't very good.
Yeah, this is it's a good fight for fight fans, though. It's going to be fun. Abreu brings it. He's also there to be hit. Ali is a guy that, you know, people wonder how high the ceiling is. I agree with you, Steve. I think he gets shaken up in this fight. But I think it's going to be action. It's not going to be Rosado Kirkland, which was going to be an absolute bloodbath. But, you know, what are you going to do? It's James Kirkland.
Hey, and what do you guys think about, I know probably, it's probably too early, but what are your thoughts on the Hopkins and Kovalev?
You know, I've picked against Hopkins so many times just out of, like, spite or the wanting of him to just step aside. In many respects, seeing is believing, but you know what? I'm just too stupid. I'm going to probably pick Kovalev. Would I bet my life on it? Absolutely not.
Yeah, I'm going with Kovalev too, but, you know, it's really hard to pick against Brian Hopkins. I agree with Steve. I think this fight's interesting, and it points out, you know, how this business and how the state commissions really work, and that all they really want is the big fights to come to them. Because, you know, you look at Nevada, they've started to, like, randomly drug test the UFC when fighters are getting licensed for them. But New Jersey, who touts himself as having a better drug testing program than Nevada, isn't doing that with this fight, which they should. They should, because they've got a 50-year-old fighter.
Hey, one last thing. I know you guys have got a lot of callers, but they're all dropping, so I'm going to take advantage real quick.
Please, go for it.
Coño. I forgot completely what I was going to ask. Oh, yeah. Isn't it time that we bury this Pacquiao Mayweather crap? Isn't this like 5 years expired? I'm not interested in seeing this anymore. I'm not. Am I the only one?
You know, unless I could write a freelance article where I get paid to write about it for, like, general websites, absolutely right. Honestly, because I figure if I can't make any money out of it, I don't want to talk about it. I think it's a dead issue. You're right. I mean, the milk is now spoiled, and it's time to move on, because it's clear. And just to blame Floyd Mayweather now is not fair. both the Pacquiao and Mayweather fight have engaged in a lot of subterfuge and a lot of deflection and a lot of spin doctoring. So everyone is to blame, and let's move on with our lives.
Hey, man. Hey, guys. Thanks for everything. You guys.
Thank you very much. Gabe, who's next on the line? We got about 10 minutes here.
703. You're live on the next round. 703.
What's up, guys? This is Luis from Baltimore.
Louis, we got a few minutes and a lot of calls. What do you got on your mind?
Hey, guys. Good show. I have two questions for you. I don't know if you talk about Klaus, Moreno, and then I have a question about Viloria and Gonzalez because I thought I read something on that fight maybe happening. So I just wanted to first start with Cloud Light. Do you guys talk about it?
Yes, we did, and we don't know what to make of it because this is not 2009 or 10. I think me and Gabe are on the same accord. Berdyaev looks very, very promising. But again, I'm not so sure what we can take out of this particular fight, but we do want to see more.
Gotcha. What happened with Moreno? I mean, is he like on the down slide right now?
You know, being there ringside, I do believe that he's on the other side of the hill. He doesn't look quite the guy that I fell in love with back in 2009, 10, and 11. But I still thought he was doing more than enough to beat Payano. And remember, let's be honest, Mike Tyson, he was the home promoter. Payano was a Tyson fighter. So just, you know, again, these things affect judges.
And then what happened? Is that a fight, Chocolatito and Viloria? Is that happening? Or
no? Well, only in my Twitter timeline. I've kind of suggested that to people, higher-ups. I've brought it up to them. You know, Roman Gonzalez all of a sudden is asking for a lot of money for a flyweight, Gabe. I heard somewhere he wants $1 million for Estrada.
Yeah.
You know, Gabe, unless he's fighting Chiquita Gonzalez or Michael Carbajal, I don't think that's in the books.
Yeah, exactly. I just talked to Michael Carbajal last week, and, you know, he's a nice fighter, but, you know, he hasn't broken through quite like that. It's just a different time. I wish he could be valued that way. Maybe he can be built towards a $1 million payday at some point, but that time ain't now.
Right. Your first fight is a flyweight on HBO, and it's probably not going to be the main event. You're not getting $1 million. Louie, we got a lot of other calls. We got to run, okay?
Gotcha.
All right.
Thank
Gabe,
you.
Let's shoot. Gabe, who's next on deck here? Gabe?
Did you get a chance to see the Roy Jones Jr. fight this last weekend?
No, when I get about 30 seconds, I'm going to check it out, though, Gabe. Roy is, I tell you, someone asked me, Tyler Kreutzer on Twitter, is he now the best Russian fighter fighting in Russia?
That's a great question. Wow, I'm just curious about the drug testing in Russia. In the 787, let's go to the well one more time. You're live on the next one.
Hey, guys, do you hear me?
Oh, look,
yes.
Oh, my God, it's the voice. What's going on?
Just one a quick comment on Dan Guzan. The first time Paul Williams fought Quintana, he trained in Puerto Rico, and they went to visit some kids with disabilities, and I remember Dan making it a big event, and he was talking to the nurses and everybody and the families of the kids with disabilities, and I remember it was the first time I met him, and I remember thinking, wow, this guy is real, you know. I was really impressed. I hadn't met him before, and he made it such a big event. I remember Paul Williams being very happy. He has just become the champion after he beat Margarito. So and I remember everybody saying like, "Whoa, that event that did not get that much publicity after what happened." Everybody was talking about it.
Yeah, I'll say this. Dan Goosen, for the Margarito Williams fight, did one of the best jobs of local promoting ever. I mean, I remember Craig Goosen saying, hey, we spent a load of money on posters, flyers. We passed them out. We had street teams. And to this date, I think it's still the largest crowd that they've had, or one of them. And that was largely due to the fact Goosen Tudor, who won that first bit over Top Rank, really did a great job of promoting. I really thought that was one of the great feathers in the cap for Goose and Tudor.
And one more thing, guys.
Yeah.
Bean has the best card this week. I am not going to watch it because I'm going to be flying on Friday to see Verdejo in Orlando. But I don't think everybody's going to watch Showtime if they got a chance to see Arce Gonzalez, which I believe Gonzalez is going to win, but it should be an action fight. And if you compare
you know,
it with what Showtime is showing.
There's no doubt. Listen, Verdejo's a kid. I want to watch every single fight he's ever involved in. And, Gabe, say what you want about Arce. He might be overmatched. And we have to be very careful how we use this term. But Lax Travieso is willing to go out on his shield, isn't he?
Yeah, he really is. It's going to be a fun fight, man. It's kind of a trip. It's a fight I didn't really think about, you know, and here it is. I like Gonzalez by knockout. I think he just punishes him coming in. But it's going to be fun while it lasts. And you never know. You never know with Jorge Arce.
Javier, have a great time in Orlando, okay?
Thank you. I appreciate you guys.
All right,
enjoy.
Gabe, let's go through a couple more calls here.
Let's see what we got. In the 787... Wow, no, not that one.
Uh-oh, boy, we're going to the well again, huh, Gabe?
I'm floundering, I know, yeah. It's a 787. We're live on the next round. 787, did everybody hit this one? We've got like three.
You know, this has been the most consistent number we've had. Every time
yeah.
we go there, nobody answers.
Nobody answers. I think that we've actually cleared the board at this point.
Okay, well, Gabe, you know what? I'm glad, though, because there's something I failed to mention in my recent columns, and he was a guy that was a big part of Tuesday Night Fights, one of the great characters, and a guy out of Philadelphia that everyone spoke very highly of, and the news was broken by Russell Peltz. Ed Darien, noted ring announcer for the Blue Horizon and many, many Tuesday Night Fight cards, passed away. And he may have not been the most famous guy, may not have been Jimmy Lennon or Michael Buffer, but you know what, Ed Darien, I really enjoyed his work, and I just want to tip my cap. I've heard so many good things about him. And I love the way Darien would say this honorable gentleman, and then he'd always repeat the last name twice. Hats off here to Ed Darien. Darien.
Yes. Yeah, that's my favorite thing. And it's like, yeah, when people do that imitation, that's who you're imitating, man. I love it. It's so classic, the double last name. Losing these guys, like, you know, I tweeted this today. It's just so true. You know, it reminds you, it kind of enriches your life. It reminds you, it wakes you up. It's like getting punched in the mouth. It's to remind you that you're alive and that you should enjoy every moment. And, you know, Steve, we're at episode 499, dude, episode 500 next week, and I'm still enjoying this partnership and this wonderful chance to talk boxing with you every week. Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
You know, and I'm going to really enjoy it when we actually get a sponsor. This deal is coming. I can't believe it. I can't believe we might actually be a sponsored version of the next round. Boy.
Well, it only took us 500 episodes.
Yeah, hey, so Duenez, if you're listening, get on the job and cross the goal line, why don't you? All right, well, that's it for this week's edition of the next round. On behalf of Gabriel Montoya and the rest of the Leave It in the Ring Radio Network, this is Steve Kim saying till the next round. Goodbye, everybody.